The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on what is a perfect day here in the Auburn Opelika area. Sun is shining, a little bit of a breeze. It's a perfect day to be playing golf or sitting in the studio, whichever one you prefer. And got lots to talk about here on this Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Tons of Auburn news to talk about today with recruiting. We talked about a couple of commitments yesterday. There was another one during the 5 o'clock hour that we need to talk about today. More information and just more reactions to the basketball scene and where guys are going and all of that stuff. And people continue to open their mouths, which is kind of crazy, but here we are. So have that to talk about today. Daryl Dapprich will join us coming up in hour number two at 3:15. Looking forward to talking all things Auburn with him, with Double D at 3:15. And as I promised and as we are doing throughout the spring and beyond, we're joined in the studio by the one and only Lindsey Crosby, our baseball go-to guy. He's with us on Tuesdays here in hour number one. Lindsey, great to have you back, man. Hope all is well.
Things are great. It's always nice to be here. If nothing else, again, because I sound great in these microphones. I can't recreate this at home. I don't know why.
I can't either. I've tried and I can't do it. I mean, it's not possible. So, look, lots going on in the baseball world. That's why we bring you on. You have other knowledge too, but I mean, baseball is just your thing. You're a genius when it comes to all this baseball stuff. You start talking about different muscles in the elbow and all these things, and it just goes way over my head. And so, it's always fun. Our weekly baseball update with you, and people can find you at bravestoday.com. They can find you on the Braves Today podcast, Auburn Daily. I mean, you're just doing everything right now when it comes to baseball.
Yeah, I spend all my time watching baseball anyway, so the thought was, let's get these thoughts out, let's get paid for it.
Get paid for it, yes.
And that's what we're doing. So there's worse ways to live a life. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, well, you're doing a fantastic job. And we always have a good time talking with you in the studio. Phone lines are open here in hour number one. Baseball questions for us, for Lindsey in particular. We'll start, as we always do, talk a little Braves. We'll talk Major League Baseball storylines. There's some big ones we got to get to.
Oh, yeah.
And then continue to try to put into words what this Auburn baseball season is, what it is going to be like down the stretch. They get going in just about an hour playing Florida A&M with a weird start time. You were telling me that's because they've got to get back. They've got a four-hour bus ride back to Tallahassee, Florida A&M does, so that's why they're starting at 3 o'clock today over at Plainsman Park.
Yeah, like if you had a traditional 6 p.m. start, you know, in a game that lasts close to 3 hours, these guys are getting home about 2 a.m. when you adjust for the time change, assume there's no traffic. And so it's easier on everybody involved to do it like this. You sometimes see these earlier games once school's out. You don't really see it right now for the most part, but they're doing it this time. And, you know, it makes sense. It's fine. These are student athletes. Student is first in that. And so let's keep that in mind.
For now. Well, we'll talk Auburn in the back half of this hour. And again, if you want to call in, talk a little baseball, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Let's start with the Bravos, though. They're 15-6 overall. They get the win over the Marlins yesterday. They also got the series win over the weekend against the Rangers. And is it unfair to say they should have had the sweep? I mean, they had their chances, and they had chances in that game on Sunday afternoon, or Sunday night, I guess, for Sunday night baseball, getting guys on base, just not getting the big hits to bring them around that they needed. They dropped the series finale, but they get a nice win over the Rangers, a series win nonetheless.
Yeah, and that's been the big thing for this Braves team, is they've been really good at scoring runs, doing all of the things that a good offense needs to do despite the slow start for Austin Riley, the slow start for Matt Olson, especially
what, 0-4 Sunday, right?
He was 0-4 Sunday, and I put a note in the story that's gonna publish in just a few minutes once they put out the lineups for today, that his last 10 games, he's, I want to say he has maybe two hits in his last 10 games. His last hit was the first game of the Astros series.
Wow.
If that kind of gives you an idea of where he is. He won for four that day. He's hitless since then. And it's they're going to play him every day. Like, they're going to play him every day. He's going to get his way out of it. He always does. But the big takeaway from it is the Braves are near the top in baseball in almost every offensive category, minus home runs, despite playing less games than almost everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And despite these slow starts from an Olsen, from a Riley, and things like that. And that's the beauty of this Braves lineup, is you're so deep all the way through that if you have one or two guys slump, even your stars, you're still a really good offense. And when they're all clicking on all cylinders, that's when you are the juggernaut that can barely be beat by anybody.
Well, there's no doubt that this team with the Braves, I mean, their strength is their offense. It's the bats in the lineup. And that was the case coming into the season, I believe. And then, of course, with Spencer Strider no longer being in the rotation on the pitching side, your offense really is the strong point. And it's the thing that is going to get you through the regular season and hopefully through a postseason run once again, Lindsay. And this team scoring 128 runs this season, only giving up 90, which is not terrible, but not great. I mean, a 38 run differential is pretty solid, but you're already in mid triple digits. So what is it about? I want to go back to Olsen in particular. What is it that's just not working for him right now? I mean, he's a great hitter. We know that. And guys go through this all the time, but man, this doesn't happen to him very often.
Yeah. The two things that I can notice, and before I forget, plus 38 run differential, it is the second highest run differential in baseball right now.
Okay.
Like, the Guardians are somewhere in the 50s, which is weird because they can never score runs, but it's like the second highest in baseball right now.
Yeah.
But the two things I've noticed with Matt Olson, and it's still early, obviously, but one, Atlanta's faced a disproportionate number of lefty starters than they had last year. And that was something, the Braves faced so many less left-handed pitchers than any other team because they did so good at crushing lefties last year. And this year, for some reason, teams have been willing to send lefties to the plate, and they haven't necessarily done all of their stuff yet. And so Matt Olson's fine against righties. He's batting like 240. It's not amazing, but it's fine. He's only batting 194 against lefties, and they've seen a lot more lefty starters than usual. They've already faced 8 lefty starters, mm-hmm. and I believe last year it was a total of 32 all season. So a little bit of a thing there.
Okay.
And then you combine that with the fact that the way that teams are attacking Atlanta this year has been different. You've seen it some with Ronald Acuna Jr. as well, where teams are really just trying to stay out of the strike zone altogether. They're elevating a lot of fastballs to both Acuna and Matt Olson. And we saw it's taken a little bit for Acuna to adjust. He's starting to come around on that. Olson's still kind of struggling with the high fastball. He ends up looking for that high fastball, and then he's not ready for some sort of breaking pitch that goes below the bat. And so it's just teams are being a lot more careful with the top of this lineup, and they're doing everything they can to not leave a mistake pitch in the zone because that's what they destroyed last year.
Yeah.
And so far it's worked. There are some adjustments that have to be made, and it takes a little bit of time for guys to get comfortable with the new approach of how folks are attacking them. He's too good to not figure it out. That's the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm confident he's going to. It's just until he does, I'm really glad Marcelo Zuna leads baseball in about every category because you need him hitting like he does to make up for it.
Yeah, I mean, no, I don't think anybody predicted that. I mean, he's just come on a tear to start the season. And the real question is, how long does this last? I mean, is this going to be the best season of his career if he just keeps going for this long, or does it eventually tail off? I mean, that's probably the favorite, right? To tail off and eventually balance out.
So I thought that, and then when you go back and you look, we saw how terrible he was.
Oh my gosh.
Early in the year last year.
Oh, it was horrible.
But since May 1st of last year, he's been one of the best hitters in all of baseball. I put out a story today. I went back and pulled the stats from May 1st of 2023 through last night's game. It's a 147-game sample, so almost a full season. He's batting .301, .371, .616. 47 homers, 125 RBIs. That would be the best single season of his career were it all in the same actual season. So we have a 643 plate appearance sample that says it's pretty consistent. Like, he's doing the same thing this year he did last year. And so, barring some sort of significant change to how you pitch him, I don't really,
expect it to change anytime soon, and that's a good thing for Atlanta because they need him to produce while Matt Olson and, to a lesser extent, Austin Riley are not quite doing it yet.
Could you say, and this may be a tough question to answer, but, I mean, is this possibly where he's not dealing with so many of the off-field issues anymore? And it's as of right now, as far as we know, everything seems to be cleaned up and going okay off the field for a guy that has had his struggles in the past. And so maybe he's just able to truly focus on baseball. That I feel like that's a fair question.
He outright said that about a week ago talking to the media.
Okay, I missed
that. In the
clubhouse.
Yeah, he had kind of, and it was kind of quiet. There wasn't a lot of writing about it, but he said that since everything legally resolved, since the family stuff resolved, he was able to just kind of go play baseball. He didn't have to think about and spend time worrying about that stuff. And so he was a lot more comfortable on a day-to-day basis just as a human being. And I think that's the big thing we always forget about when we talk about sports and we talk about players who aren't performing and stuff like that, is like, these are human beings and they have things going on. And he had a lot of stuff going on between legal issues. I'm going to call them marital issues, even though I believe that's a partner and not a spouse, but had a lot of stuff going on. And when all that kind of resolved, his performance picked back up to the point now where it feels like Atlanta's going to pick up the 2025 option for, I think it's $16 or $12 million to have him for one more year, because he's hitting like a guy who's getting paid $30 million a year.
Yeah, which this time last year, there's no shot they were going to do that. I mean, which is how bad he was playing, plus the off-field drama. I mean, yeah. Ozuna was not a player you wanted on your roster.
We were openly speculating, are they going to just cut him and eat the money when they owed him?
I think we talked about that on this show.
Yeah, like they owed him almost $32 million combined for 23 and 24, and we said, are they just going to eat that? Are they going to send him on a trade to somewhere else and take back a bad contract in return? And instead, he's now living up to that, to the point where we're talking about picking up the option. Now,
that's wild.
Atlanta definitely won't actually pick up that option until the end of the year. That's just the way they work. They're not going to pick it up early, but it's, as of right now, it's looking like they absolutely would pick that option up for the next year.
The Braves are 15-6 overall this season. They're playing the Marlins in the series right now. And you look at the NL East, which has become really interesting quietly, I feel like, with the Phillies doing their thing. They're 15-8. They've got a couple of games more played, of course, than the Braves. And then how about the New York Mets, who had just a brutal start? They're 7-3 in their last 10. They're two games above 500, and yes, it's early, but they're only 3.5 games back here as we get towards the end of April. The NL East has become a very interesting division right now.
It really has. The Phillies' rotation feels like it's the best in baseball right now. I mean, they have everybody. I was looking at this morning because I do an article every weekday called The Morning Meeting. We look at what the division did yesterday, and four of the five starters have ERAs under 3. And the fifth ERA is a 3.16. So, like, it's just, they have a combined 11 wins already, and the team's played, I think it's 23 games, and they have a combined 15 wins in the rotation already. So their rotation's become very, very good, and that's obviously an issue. And then for the Mets, they've kind of gotten surprising performances from the rotation, and then Starling Marte, finally healthy. He had groin surgery, I think it was 2 years ago, and was still feeling some of that last year. He's finally healthy, and he's batting almost 300 right now, and it's a good thing for them because Jeff McNeil is batting in the 240s. Brandon Nimmo is barely breaking 200. Mm-hmm. Francisco Lindor's batting average is below his weight, and he only weighs 190. Like,
that's one way to put it.
And he's making $30-something million a year for the next, 8 years or whatever.
Yep.
And so, like, it feels like the Phillies are more sustainable than the Mets, because the Mets are kind of, I'm not going to say smoke and mirrors, but the Mets are kind of making it work off of good starting pitching performances and playing some bad teams, right? Mm-hmm. And so it feels like that's eventually, that luck's going to run out.
Which,
like,
you have to take advantage when you do that, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to win those games, and, like, that's a thing that they've been able to do, and I say that. They won 2 out of 3 against the Dodgers over the weekend. So, I mean, they're able to beat some good teams, too. It's just one of those, it feels like this isn't necessarily sustainable to the extent that Philly is sustainable. Because Philly's had some offensive issues, too. Nick Castellanos apparently needs Tom Brenneman to do something terrible so he can get back onto hitting again. But, like, Trey Turner's hitting. Bryce Harper, when he's not out on paternity leave, he's been doing well. The pitching staff's doing well.
Philly feels more like a threat all season. New York feels like they're doing this now, but it's going to trail off unless they get those the big three of those four hitters actually doing something again. That's kind of their issue. Is Pete Alonso's hitting in a contract year, but that's about it. And at a certain point, I remember I talked to John Smoltz last year. I interviewed him before he did a charity golf tournament. And he told me the thing that you need to win is you need three hot hitters, three hot starters, and three hot relievers. And right now you look at the Mets team and it's like, who's the third hot guy? Starling Marte is doing well. Pete Alonso's doing well enough. 7 home runs. I think he's like third in baseball in home runs. Who's the third guy? Because it's not any of your big three you're paying the money to be. So
they would expect one of those to probably become that at some point. But
you have to hope somebody will pick it up. But until that happens, and they lost Francisco Alvarez to a torn thumb ligament, their young catcher, he's 22, one of the best young catchers in baseball. He's going to be out for a couple months now. And so it's just, we expected them to have to go to the prospects later in the year, and that's still an option. But right now, they're making it work. But if they don't get some guys picking up, they're going to be falling down in the standings pretty quickly.
All sorts of things going on around Major League Baseball. We'll continue to talk about that. Some big storylines, including a team that, God, I can't stand. And their manager was thrown out of the game. But this was unbelievable in this story. We'll talk about that with Lindsey Crosby when we come back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
All right, back inside the studio here for the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We're joined by Lindsey Crosby, and I'll let him plug everything he's doing because I tell you every time, I can't keep up. But he's doing a fantastic job covering so many different angles of Major League Baseball, college baseball, everything. Tell them where they can find it, Lindsey.
So I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. It's kind of the hub for everything, so at Crosby Baseball. But we're talking Atlanta Braves, bravestoday.com. A lot of that's on my Twitter account as well. We have a podcast, the Braves Today podcast. People sometimes hear that podcast on this channel from time to time. Mm-hmm. We also have MarlinsToday.com covering the Miami Marlins. We have Auburn Daily covering the Auburn Tigers. I do baseball stuff for there, but it's covering whether it's recruiting, whether it's football, basketball, all that kind of stuff. We do everything there for Auburn. And then the phone lines are open. If you have a question the next, you know, I'm here for another 38 minutes. If you have a question about baseball, I'm amazed. I got it right, too. If I got it wrong, I was going to tell folks, hey, we're on a delay in case I curse.
And if they're on the stream, yeah, exactly. They're on the stream. That's right.
On the stream. So if you have questions in the next few minutes, I'm here. I want to hear from you.
Yeah. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. Talking a little Major League Baseball coming up at the bottom of the hour. We will flip over to Auburn Baseball, talk a little bit about that, how they can somehow, A, get a midweek win over Florida A&M today, which, yes, that is a real thing, and B, if they're ever going to win an SEC game again. I mean, that seems to be a legitimate concern right now for Auburn baseball. But that's coming up in the next 8 or 9 minutes. I was teasing a topic that I wanted to bring up because this happened. This was yesterday, am I right? This was happening yesterday.
Yes.
In New York for the New York Yankees. Their manager got thrown out of a baseball game. All right, nothing too crazy.
Not the first time that's happened. Boone leads in ejections since he became manager of the Yankees. He leads MLB in ejections. So not weird that that happened.
Yes, Aaron Boone is not new to being tossed out of a baseball game, and it's not a new thing that a manager gets thrown out of a baseball game. But if you have not seen this, go look it up. It is wild. And again, I do not like the Yankees. If you know me, if you listen to this show, I'm a big Red Sox fan. I'm a Boston guy. I love everything from up there. And I'm all for throwing out a Yankees manager, player, fan. I don't care. But him getting thrown out yesterday was wrong. It was bad. And here's what happened. Basically, he's standing in the dugout on the top two steps, you know, 1 foot above the other, sitting with his arm up there, whatever, right? And you may have something to add to this.
I was going to say, like, so the scenario here, first batter of the game gets hit by a pitch in the foot. And so they're checking to see, did he swing or not? And Aaron Boone is mad about the first base umpire saying that he didn't swing. Because Boone, at that angle, Boone's like, he swung. And Hunter Winnelstadt, the home plate umpire, said, I did what I'm supposed to do. I checked. If you say anything else, I'm going to throw you out of the game. Mm-hmm. Which is an incredibly harsh position to stake 2 pitches into the game.
Right.
But
Hunter Winnelstadt, remember that name, Hunter Winnelstadt says that, and then Boone's like, okay, he goes back to the dugout, standing in the dugout.
And he's standing in the dugout, one foot above the other on the top step, the other foot on the bottom. He's got his arm on the top of the wall. And there's video of this. There's multiple angles that have come out. He is just standing there. He's chewing his gum, doing whatever, and he does not say a word. But there's a fan in a blue shirt behind him that is
literally
sitting
right behind him. Second row.
Yep,
first row.
Yep, sitting behind him in the second, first row, behind the netting, in a blue shirt that stands up and hollers. And the umpire turns and says, boom, you're out, you're gone, but pointing to Aaron Boone and not the fan. And Boone loses his mind, rightfully so, and he says, I didn't say anything. He was pointing back. He said, it was the fan. And he was having none of it. And he gets thrown out for what a fan yelled onto the field.
And Hunter Winnelstadt, when Boone started getting mad, said, like, I don't care who said it, you're gone, which is probably not the right position to take. But the issue I have with this is they asked Hunter Winnelstadt about this after the game.
Oh, the statement's horrible.
When big things happen, typically MLB will require the umpire to talk to a pool reporter. So Hunter Winnelstadt, in essence, says, I've been doing this for a long time. I've never thrown a manager out for something a fan said. Somebody at the end of the dugout was chirping me, and rather than walk down there and figured it out, Aaron Boone's in charge of the dugout. I threw him out. It's like, no, that's not okay.
That's a horrible stance. And so many people were all over his statement because the best comment I saw was like, all he had to do was say, I messed up, I'm sorry. And instead, he wrote a 3-paragraph statement trying to somewhat defend what he did. And it was just wild. And look, again, I'm not a Yankees guy. I don't care. But that can't happen, Lindsay. That can't happen for a manager to be thrown out of the game, as you said, 2 pitches in because the emotions of the home plate umpire got in the way. And this is a hot take, and I tweeted it yesterday, and I stand behind it, and I know it's a little out there, but it's a little funny, but it's also a little true. Wouldn't have happened with a robot ump. He would have just kept on going, and the human emotion part of it would have never existed.
And I can't think of any other sport where umpires take this combative of a role on a day-to-day basis as baseball. And robot umpires, this would have happened. Your calls would be a lot more correct. I had a big thing on Twitter just today about a national baseball show was talking to a 37-year-old veteran pitcher about what would robot umps look like in MLB in response to this situation. Somebody had said robot umps were the answer. And this 37-year-old veteran went on this thing about how hitters would hate robot umps and all of this stuff. And he's a pitcher. It's important to know the context there. Yeah. He's a pitcher. So, of course, he cares about what hitters want as a pitcher. And a 37-year-old veteran who's been in the majors forever.
Yeah.
And my whole thing was, okay, like, we know there's an umpiring problem. Like, we all are aware of that. That's been one of the biggest stories. It's not Shohei Ohtani having money stolen from him this year. But why is that the guy you're talking to about this?
Right.
Like, minor leaguers are using automated balls and strikes in the minor leagues right now. This is not a speculative thing. Mm-hmm. You don't have to ask, hey, how would hitters feel if we started doing this? You can just ask a guy who's doing that now.
Yeah, this isn't 10 years ago. I mean, it's literally started to happen in the minor leagues.
Like, this is now the third season where AAA has had 2 different versions of automated balls and strikes. The first half of the week, it is completely robot umps. The umpire has a earpiece in his ear, and when the pitch comes in, it tells him if that was a ball or a strike, and that's what he calls. That's the first half of the week, Tuesday through Thursday. Friday through Sunday, they have what's called the challenge system, which is, I love this. We've talked about this once or twice before, but long story short, umpire calls balls and strikes like normal. If a hitter, the catcher or the pitcher thinks he made a mistake, they can challenge it. Each team gets like 3 challenges per game. And within 10 seconds on the video board, they show you if he was right or wrong.
If he's wrong,
they fix it.
I love it.
Why are we not doing that already?
Why not? I don't get it. And we've had so many conversations on this show about how officiating and the human emotion aspect gets involved. That's what happens with balls and strikes, I think, in big moments.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it happened yesterday with Aaron Boone and the New York Yankees getting thrown out. I mean, that just can't happen. And to come out and say, well, I may have been wrong, but you're the manager, so you're gonna get blamed. Unbelievable, in my opinion. So crazy things happening around Major League Baseball, but we're gonna flip to Auburn baseball when we come back. Talk a little bit about Butch Thompson and the Tigers. Lindsey Crosby joining us for the next 30 minutes.
Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Back here in the Tuesday edition of On the Line, we get caught up telling stories during the break. And so many things going on with Major League Baseball. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about minor league baseball stories and Lindsey telling me just how crazy minor league baseball is and all the rules changes and how certain rules apply for certain guys at certain times. And then when they leave, they all change back. And I can't keep up with
it.
It's a lot. It's ridiculous. So, well, we appreciate you being with us here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We've talked a lot of Major League Baseball. I'll talk some Braves as well. I want to flip over to Auburn baseball, which I know this continues, unfortunately, Lindsey, to be a tough topic of conversation. It continues to be tough for guys like you, especially, and so many others around town that cover this team on a daily basis, guys like me that talk about this team all the time. I mean, it's beginning to be really hard. And we're just the ones watching. We're just the ones trying to write about it and talk about it. It's got to be tough to be Butch Thompson and this coaching staff trying to coach through this right now for Auburn baseball. And then for the players, whether you are a hitter, pitcher, doesn't matter. It's got to be tough sledding right now over for Auburn baseball at Plainsman Park. I mean, it's been a rough season, man.
Yeah, and I don't like to try to parse meaning out of guys' statements and things like that. But when you talk to Butch Thompson, like, you can tell he's frustrated. And it's not any one player's fault or any one person's fault, the coaching staff, whatever it might be. It's a confluence of things. And I think, like, here's the hard part about this is, one, if it was like one thing, we could fix it pretty quickly. Like,
right.
Like, these are professionals. His assistants have won awards. I mean, this is a good coaching staff. If it was one simple thing, they could fix it. Every now and then, you have kind of random fluky things happen. And if a bunch of them that are all bad all happen at the same time, you have a situation like this. Mm. I personally feel like if you go back and you play this season 100 times, you play the schedule that they've had so far 100 times, they're not, 2-12 in conference play? I mean,
2-16.
2-16, I'm sorry. 2-16. They're not 2-16 in conference play. They're not 19-20 overall. I feel like if you play this again, some of these things break differently. Mm-hmm. And the hard part is understanding that that's kind of how baseball works. And building a team, building a program, you're banking on, over the long term, the advantages that we can get on talent selection, on coaching, on strategic decisions can outweigh the random bad stuff that's happening. I think I mentioned this last week, but Billy Beane of the Oakland A's, he famously talks about his stuff doesn't work in the postseason because it's such a small sample size in the postseason compared to the regular season. And even in college baseball, they've played 39 games. You don't always have time for injury luck to even out, for a new pitch grip to work versus not working, whatever it might be. And now you're in a situation where Florida A&M is not a great program, right? They lost to Troy by double digits at home early in the year. They typically tend to not win their Power 5 games, but people are legitimately questioning, can they or can they not win this game simply because of where Auburn is this year compared to where they usually are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frustrating for them.
That's a scary spot to be in for Auburn. I mean, it's a 3 o'clock game on a Tuesday coming up in just about 20 minutes or so that you can catch that over on Wings 94.3. But, I mean, that's not the spot you want to be, man. Having Auburn fans question and Auburn media folks like us questioning, man, can Auburn win this game coming off of what just happened again this weekend? I mean, that's not where you want to be.
Yeah, well, at the same time, I mean, some of this is Some of it's out of their control. Ike Irish not in the lineup today. He's been dealing with injury. Bobby Pierce not in the lineup today. He's been dealing with injury. I mean, you've had rotating spots. You have Caleb Freeman in right field. I want to say it's one of his first starts of the year. I mean, you've had injury stuff, but you've also had underperformance. Your starter today is Chase Alsup, who you thought was going to be your Friday night guy. He has an ERA of 7.46, which if you're not great at, if you're not super knowledgeable in baseball, one, I'm amazed you're still here. Thank you. It's because Jacob's so great. But also, that's not great.
No, that's not.
You know?
That's not typically the number you're looking for.
Yeah. But at the on the flip side, the Florida A&M starter has an ERA of 10.47.
Hey!
So it could be worse. Like, that's kind of...
It could be worse.
It could be worse. I mean... I hate to make that joke right now. I love this program. I love this coaching staff, these players. They're all great people. I mean, I've never...
That is a fact.
All of my time around Auburn baseball, whether it's the coaches, whether it's the staff, whether it's the players, I've never come away and been like, this is just a bad person, right? Like, they're all great people personally.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just not working this year. And I don't know what type of major changes you make other than upgrading personnel where you think you can upgrade personnel and hoping for just better luck than you had this year, because everything that could have gone wrong for the most part went wrong this year.
Yeah.
All of your returning starting pitchers for the most part were completely ineffective. Joseph Gonzalez, Chase Alsup, some of your new guys didn't hit the ground running. You dealt with injuries to various offensive performers. Cade Guevara, they thought was going to be starting on opening day as a true freshman. He tore his ACL in the fall. He didn't get back until just a couple weeks ago. Again, Ike Irish missing time. Bobby Pierce missing time. Cooper McMurray missed the whole fall for the most part with an ankle foot issue. It's been a struggle to get everything to line up correctly on the field, in the bullpen, in the rotation, and this is the result of it.
Auburn had a chance to kind of get back on track this past weekend when they were in Starkville, Stark Vegas, as I call it, and they went up there for what was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series, what ended up being a Friday and then doubleheader series on Sunday. Not to use this as an excuse, but that is a tough adjustment to make, especially after you get blasted on Friday night, 8-1. Mm-hmm. It rained out on Saturday. You were there and ready to go, and then the game didn't happen. So then you come back for two shortened games going into it. You lose 3-1 in the first game on Sunday, and then 4-3 in a technically extra inning in the eighth inning of that second game on Sunday. You covered it, I'm sure, and we're on top of this. I mean, what'd you see from Auburn in this series where they were in two of the three? They just, again, got swept.
They were in two of the three, and it kind of comes back to missed opportunities, right? One of Butch Thompson's things that he likes to talk about is timely hitting, right? And so many times you would see this Auburn team be in a position to potentially score some runs. On Sunday, they combined for six hits in both games. Auburn had six hits in 15 innings. And there was just too many times where they had an opportunity to score some runs. They got a guy on via walk, whatever it might be. And you struck out nine times in that second game. You struck out five times in that first game. And just the timely hitting wasn't there. And that's kind of been a symptom that you've seen in a lot of these losses. You've seen either guys not able to put the ball into play when you needed to, or guys not be able to get a base hit when you needed one. You'd get a guy under two guys on, and then the rally would die because mm-hmm. of a strikeout, because of a grind into double play, things like that. And that was kind of, I mean, you've been in this thing where the pitching staff wasn't good for a while. You figured out some of that. I mean, Mississippi State scored, what was it, seven runs combined on Sunday in both those games?
Yeah, but after you scoring lost, eight on Friday.
Yeah, but you lost because you scored four. And like the offense started to slump, and that's another one of those luck things. Like, you'd rather them slump at the same time than slump at separate times.
Yeah.
Because they slump at the same time, theoretically they're going to not be slumping at the same time. I mean, it's
baseball.
Yeah, baseball. That's baseball, Susan. And that's kind of how it works. It's frustrating when it happens to your team. Like, we've seen this with other. This is the year State had last year. This was State's year last year. Was they couldn't hit, and then when they were hitting, they couldn't pitch, and that's what Auburn's dealing with now. It's almost like it kind of goes around and comes around, and it's Auburn's time right now to be in it.
Yeah, well, Auburn, after coming off that loss at Mississippi State, Florida A&M today, and then just to make matters worse, not that they're going to play a good team this weekend because LSU has not had a great season, but it is on the road. They're back on the road in Baton Rouge this weekend, and I want to look at the SEC standings for baseball because, I mean, you start talking about some teams that are really, really good, and something a team that we've talked about before that we will continue to talk about because they are the talking point of college baseball right now, it's the Kentucky Wildcats, who are 15-3 overall in the SEC, 32-7 overall on the season. They're the number one team in the country, Lindsey. That Kentucky team is on fire, but it's not just a lucky run. That's a good team.
It's a good team, and I think the biggest thing, and I didn't necessarily have them in that grouping that I had of the tough teams to start the conference schedule, but one of the big takeaways, if you're looking at the SEC baseball standings, I believe it's only four teams have a winning record on the road in conference play. A&M is 7-4. Arkansas is 5-4. They lead the West. Tennessee is 5-4. Kentucky is 12-2 on the road. This has been a season that has been heavily dominant. Home teams are winning games. In almost every situation, the home teams are the ones that are winning. And some of the teams that have winning records on the road, Arkansas, the only reason they do is because they came into Auburn and they won that series.
Right.
Kentucky is the sole exception, and they have been much better than people projected them to be, people expected them to be, and it's not like they've played an easy schedule. Their opponent winning percentage is fourth best in the conference. Like, they're playing a tough schedule.
Yeah.
They just have won their games, and their pitching has been a lot better than we expected. From the minor league side, covering minor league baseball like I was for so long, we'd like to look at how many potential draft picks a college roster would have, and especially first-rounders kind of have an idea, because usually your best pitchers are first-round draft pick candidates. And Kentucky, we didn't have a lot of names in there this year. It was a lot of guys that was like, well, you know, they've got some promising players who we could see maybe peaking into day two, but probably day three picks, which is, you know, rounds 11 through 20. And instead, they've had a lot of pitching step up and do really well. And then that offense has raked like I don't think we thought they would. And so it sucked for Auburn to come off that tough stretch and then get Kentucky at home when yeah. and to not get the advantage of having a home game because you played the one team that is immune to losing on the road in Kentucky.
Yeah, and I'm going to try and find this stat because I don't know it off the top of my head, and you might, but with that Kentucky road record of 12-2, if they keep up the pace, I mean, they're going to go down as one of the best road teams in SEC baseball history, would they not? I mean, that's got to be up there. I don't know what that number is, and I can try to find it, but I mean, 12-2 on the road and in the SEC, I know they may have a couple in there that are not SEC games, but just in general, road record of 12-2. And in baseball, the way I look at it is there are tough environments in baseball, sure. There are tough places to play in the SEC. Mississippi State is one. Auburn can become one. I mean, there's some teams in here that are really tough to play at, but
LSU,
absolutely. Baseball is more of you have to travel and go on the road, and you're just the travel and not being at home. It's not that you're walking into just the craziest, loudest atmosphere in the country and that's going to throw you off. It can, but I just feel like Kentucky has overcome the road traveling on the road woes that teams go through. I mean, they've just overcome all of those and just doesn't really seem to bother them.
Yeah. The thing that is tough for a lot of people that you kind of have to understand about college baseball is these are full-time students who, if you play a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series, you're leaving early on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And so your entire, like, it's different from football where you travel, you stay overnight, and then you play. You're practicing on the road. Oftentimes, these guys are on buses. Now, for coming here, I believe they flew here. But, like, it's tough to win on the road. And they went, some of this is schedule-wise, they went to Missouri. Missouri's not a great team. They went to Ole Miss, who is ranked, but they swept Ole Miss in Oxford, and then obviously came here and swept us. They do still have some more tough road matchups. They got to go to South Carolina, and then they have to go to Florida, which may not actually be that tough other than Joe Caglione.
Mm-hmm.
But things have worked out for them. And I do think if they can continue, those are winnable road series. I think that they could be one of the better performing road SEC teams we've seen in a long time, probably down with some of those Florida teams like the Jonathan India, Jackson Kowar era,
yeah,
where they had those three first round picks that just kind of dominated, or even LSU, who won, I believe, two out of three here last year when they had the top two picks in the draft, and they had 12 or 13 drafted players. We even took one out of three from them then because it's so hard to play on the road, but they were a really good road team as well.
Yeah, SEC baseball, man, it's always tough. You've got Kentucky at 15-3. You've got Arkansas at 14-4. Texas A&M 13-5. They're screaming and hollering and having a good time over there, and rightfully so. And even Mississippi State at 10-8, and Vanderbilt at 10-8.
Going to Mississippi is tough to play.
I'm telling you, man.
Either Mississippi school, that is a baseball craze state. Those are tough environments to play in. Vandy is tough, one, because the construction, two, because the Whistler, and then three, because that ballpark's just so small. But like Florida, it is hard to play on the road. Florida, these are a lot of tough places to play. The ones that have turf don't make it any easier, because obviously it's harder to play on turf. And yes, I honestly think at the SEC level, you shouldn't have turf. You should be playing on real grass and clay, but that's just me. But it is hard to win on the road in the SEC. It has been doubly hard this year. Kentucky somehow figured that out. Auburn is 1-9 on the road, so they have not figured that out. That is obviously the worst record on the road. But like, look at some of these teams. A&M 25-1 at home. Arkansas 27-1 at home. Tennessee 26-2 at home. I mean, you went to a lot of these schools and played them in their house, and they had amazing records at home. It was a rough draw schedule-wise for Auburn this year. NIL has not made things easier because, yes, it allowed Auburn to overcome the disadvantage of not having a state lottery. A lot of other states can give in-state players free rides because of the state lottery. But Auburn's still behind the eight ball because we have NIL like everybody else has NIL. But we still have the disadvantage of not having scholarships to give to in-state students because that are funded by the lottery.
Yep.
It's just... these coaches have acknowledged this is a deficit that Alabama has versus everybody else in the conference. Every other state in the conference has those but us.
And Auburn has dealt with it for a long time, and it seems like we'll continue to deal with this for a long time. And so they've got Florida A&M. That game gets going in about 10 minutes, and then they'll take on LSU on the road this weekend. We'll wrap up hour number one and our conversation with Lindsey Crosby after this here on ESPN 106.7.
On the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Got a few more minutes with Lindsey Crosby joining us here from Braves Today, joining us from Marlins Today. Is that what it's called now, too? The Marlins website, right?
Yes.
And then also Auburn Daily. So you're doing all sorts of baseball writing, conversation, podcasting, coverage. I mean, just all sorts of things. And so as we are wrapping up this hour, we've talked about the Braves. We've talked about Major League Baseball, talking Auburn baseball, SEC baseball as well. I mean, just so many great things that we've gone over. And looks like we have a phone call. Is he wanting to come on right now, Alan? Okay, let's do that then, Lindsey. We'll have this caller come in, maybe have a question for you or for us in terms of baseball. 334-321-1390. Jones, you're on the line. You got a minute or so, man. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Lindsey, real quick. All year long on Auburn's baseball regarding the program, all we've heard is, we're playing this team and that team, and they're top 10, they're top 5, they're this, they're that. Why not Auburn? Well, you know, we're not an also-ran type of program. This baseball program is turned into Vanderbilt's football program, and it's very disenchanting for people that send Auburn money for things like this to not happen. Is it because we lost Tim Hudson? Please explain what's going on at Auburn.
Will do. Appreciate the call, Jones.
I do think that there's something about getting the pitching higher right. And Darren Schoenrock, super talented, knows a lot about baseball. For some reason, it didn't work out last year. I do think you can make this pitching hire work out, but I think you're a little bit... I think this is going to take some time because he's brought in a whole new way of doing things. And Tim Hudson was very, very, he knows baseball. He knows baseball more than any of us ever will.
He also just got whoever he wanted.
Yeah, like that was the other thing, is recruiting-wise, he was getting his guys. You brought in a former major league coach. He worked with prospects in the White Sox system. And he did a lot of advancements behind the scenes on biomechanics, bringing in data, and things like that. And my experience around baseball teams is when you bring in a ton of data, it's really easy to get overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And the data isn't as useful as the person that can accurately convey the data to the player and figure out what they need when they need it. And I don't quite think Auburn's there yet. They've got the data. They have to figure out the right way to use it, and the players have to understand what can help them and what can't. And that comes with time. I just don't think they've had enough time yet. I think this team can be better pitching-wise next year. I don't know if they have time to get it done this year.
He is Lindsey Crosby. Check him out at BravesToday.com, the Braves Today podcast, Auburn Daily, and Marlins Today as well. Lindsey, always appreciate you coming in, man. It's always a lot of fun.
Thanks, buddy.
That's Lindsey Crosby. Hour number one is wrapped up. We'll come back, have a quick segment in hour number two, just you and me. And then Double D, Daryl Dapridge, will be with us as well, talking all things Auburn Athletics. Hour number two coming up.
Production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. Hour number one is in the books. You know what that means. Hour number two is underway right here on ESPN Radio. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. If you missed any of hour number one, Lindsey Crosby just walked out of here, our baseball guru, our guy that we have each and every week now as the spring is rolling on throughout the summer as well. He'll join us every Tuesday for the first hour talking. All things baseball, Braves, Major League Baseball, Auburn baseball, SEC. I mean, so many things going on in the baseball world, and it's always fun to get a baseball power hour is what we used to call it. And so he was with us all of hour number one, so if you need your baseball fix for the week, you can go check that out with the podcast. You can find it one of two ways, ESPNAU.com, that's our station website, or you can just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. Going to talk a little recruiting, more transfer portal than anything for Auburn here, Auburn football that is, here in this first segment of hour number one, because then coming up at 3:15, we got our guy Double D. Daryl Dapperts will join us on the phone lines as he does every Tuesday for 30 minutes. Excited to talk to him. I have a feeling, ladies and gentlemen, I have a feeling that Daryl Dapperts is going to have a few things to say today. I just got a gut feeling, so stay tuned for that. We're looking forward to Double D joining us later in the show. Well, we talked yesterday, Uncle T-Bone and I did, about two of the big players that committed to Auburn on the defensive line, two of the transfer portal guys, Bleedy and Rakes, and now you've got another one that happened yesterday after we were off the air during the drive. It's the Arkansas State edge, Karen Crawford, a guy who is a stud. I mean, let's just be real. He is somebody who comes in with 2 years of eligibility remaining, formerly at Arkansas State, and announced that he is coming to Auburn. Now listen to this quote. You ready? He said, the atmosphere. That's what he talks about. He says, in pretty much the position I'm in right now, I feel like I'm in a position to thrive in this defense. I feel like I definitely will be able to thrive with some other guys. He said, I'm blessed, really blessed. My mom is blessed. Everybody is. It's just a great feeling. And you talk about somebody here who is joining Auburn, who has not played at this level, that is truly blessed, to use his own word, to be here, to take this opportunity, to have this opportunity. And what you hope is this guy steps in, is going to give you everything he's got, because he wants to have this. He wants to be here, and he's excited to be here. And during his time at Arkansas State, as a freshman, had a sack, had 14 total tackles, and then it was last year that he really came onto the scene. 44 total tackles, 5.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, and 2 fumble recoveries as a sophomore, and he entered the portal. I highly doubt Arkansas State said, hey, you need to go, we don't want you anymore. He entered the portal because he knew he could get a bigger, better home, and Auburn is the landing spot for Crawford. This guy, he's a stud. Let's just be real. 6'4", 245, basically, coming off the edge. Sign me up. And if I'm a running back going after this guy or running towards him, I'm just getting down on the ground immediately. Intern Allen says he's a dude. Yes, he is. At 6'4", 243, 245, whatever, 2 pounds. It is what it is. He's just somebody that's going to come in, and I think, here it is, your instant impact player, along with the two guys we talked about yesterday on the defensive front. So you can't tell me that DJ Durkin is not lighting it up in the transfer portal. Hugh Freeze is not lighting it up in the transfer portal. You can't tell me that. It's because they are. They are beefing up the defense more than we have seen at Auburn in a long, long time. And I'm excited to talk to Daryl about this coming up in a few minutes. And phone lines are still open if you want to get in. 334-321-1390. I mean, there's going to be bodies all over the place on this defense. And between now and when the portal closes, and then from that point all summer long and into the fall, we get to figure out who in the world's going to play. And that's a good problem to have, ladies and gentlemen. I know it's not something we've had in the past, and I joke about this a lot, but it's kind of true, is it not? Is it not true that Auburn, for years and years and years and years, has dealt with a depth problem, especially on the defensive side of the football, where we all hold our breath and hope that that defensive lineman doesn't twist his ankle, or that linebacker doesn't throw out his shoulder on a hit, or that cornerback doesn't pull a hammy? Like, isn't that, aren't those problems that we've had? Aren't you tired of feeling that way? And imagine you're just the fan that feels that way. Imagine how the coaches have felt too, which some are doing something about it and some of them didn't know what to do. But you've got a coach now and a coaching staff now that knows how to fix it. You go get players. It's not that hard of a concept. The process is difficult. Landing them is difficult. Securing them is difficult. But man, it's not a hard ideology to say, you know what? We should probably just go get more players. Go get better players. Wow, what a crazy thought that is. And this staff is finally doing that. They're going to get guys that can play at this level, that can play SEC football. I wanted to say SEC West, but that's not a thing anymore. SEC football. And that's what Crawford is. That's what Bleedy is. That's what these guys are. And in this spring portal window, we say this all the time, the portal giveth and the portal taketh. You're going to get some and you're going to lose some. And here recently, as of the last 20 or 30 minutes, a couple of guys have entered the transfer portal for Auburn. The first one is the cornerback, Tyler Scott. He is a young guy that was back there who has decided to enter his name into the transfer portal. 4-star recruit from the state of Georgia. Only played and appeared in one game last season, playing some corner, playing in that nickel spot as well. Just a guy that never really got going here at Auburn. And so best of luck to Tyler Scott, who was, again, one of those young guys that I think Hugh Freeze has referred to quite a bit, that they're going to have to, those young puppies is what Hugh Freeze says, that we're going to have to step up and play, and it will not be Tyler Scott for Auburn anymore. He has entered the transfer portal. And some of you may care about that one, some of you may not, and that's okay. This is a much bigger name, though, the next one, because, yeah, there's two. There's two corners. There's two DBs that have entered the transfer portal. And this is a much bigger name that I think is going to resonate with some folks. And it's Colton Hood. Colton Hood entered the transfer portal today as a guy that in four games last year, 33 snaps in the bowl game as well against Maryland, just was not the go-to guy. He wasn't the go-to guy. He had people in front of him like Keontae Scott, Kayan Lee. I mean, it wasn't going to happen here that for him. And it's unfortunate because he's the Hood name, the last name Hood here has meant something for Auburn a lot of years. I mean, we understand the family aspect of this. And losing Colton Hood, that one hurts. That one hurts a little bit because while he may not have been your go-to guy, he was a depth piece and he was a young stud that you could count on and rely on if you needed him, if somebody were to get hurt or if somebody else were to decide to transfer. I mean, all these different things. And he could have just beaten somebody out for a spot somewhere. And that's not going to happen anymore as Colton Hood has entered the transfer portal. So, all things considered, you are still okay in that spot, in the cornerback spot, in the DB spot. You do have some young guys. You have a couple of key returners. Yeah, you do. But man, you've got some young ones in there. And again, Hugh Freeze has already talked about this. They're going to have to step up. They have to improve. They're going to have to step up in the limelight and be ready to go. And once you start losing these guys, does that mean Auburn's going after some? Yeah, probably. And I told you yesterday I didn't think Auburn was done. And there we are. You get one yesterday. And I think Auburn and this staff are still going to go after the guys on defense because, man, you've got the coaches over there that want it, that can get players and understand what it takes to win in the SEC, what it takes to win in Power 5 football. And so Colton Hood leaves today. That's unfortunate. I do hate to see him go. Tyler Scott enters the portal as well. But between Bleedy, Rakes, and then the commitment earlier today, you are just really feeling good about, with Crawford as well, that's the one. You're feeling good about what Auburn has done through the transfer portal. And again, I still don't think we're done. I don't think Auburn is done here on the defensive side. And I'll say this too, I don't think it's all out of the question that Auburn doesn't go after a quarterback. I don't think that's out. And I know that's crazy because we had sort of written off that topic. We had written off that conversation. But I wouldn't write it off just yet. We'll take our first break here in hour number one. Yes, it's a little early, but that means Daryl Dappert's Double D will be joining us when we come back. We'll talk Auburn football in the transfer portal. We'll talk basketball news. Yeah, he'll have something to say about Aiden Holloway and a whole lot more about Auburn athletics when we come back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
On the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Let's get to the phone lines here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. And no, it's not a listener, it's a guest. He's with us every single Tuesday at this time. Daryl Dappert's Double D with us on the phones. You can find him on Locked On Auburn a couple of days a week. You can find him on radio shows all over the state. My man, Daryl, how are you, man? Happy Tuesday.
Man, happy Tuesday to you as well. I hope you're doing okay, my friend.
I am, man. Staying busy as always. And look, it's always a busy time in Auburn athletics. You know that.
Absolutely. And as we're, you know, talking right now in the last hour, two Auburn corners have just jumped in the transfer portal. Colton Hood and Tyler Scott have both jumped in the transfer portal for Auburn, which is a little bit surprising with Hood. I thought Hood was going to be in the two deep and was going to be the odds-on favorite to probably start next year. But both guys jump in the portal, and I think that's more not an indictment, but what it is it's more of an indication of what Auburn's roster has become. This is what happens when rosters become pretty good and guys fight for playing time and rooms are really, really deep, and I'm not just spinning it. I mean, the defensive secondary for Auburn is loaded.
These guys looked around, realized that, and so they want to go somewhere where they can get some playing time.
Yeah, and that's something we were talking about right before you came on. It's the first time we've had a chance to talk about that today. And I'm with you on the Hood news. That one's a little surprising, and that one hurts, I think, because he's a very talented young player. And I talked about the family legacy that family has had here. And him jumping in was a little surprising. Tyler Scott, you know, it's just a guy that never really got going here, and so best of luck to him. And so, Daryl, you see guys entering the portal, but man, Auburn is not slacking in terms of bringing guys in through the portal. That defense has been beefed up. Two guys on the defensive front and an edge guy in the last, 48 hours?
Yeah, I mean, Auburn not only addressed what I consider to be one of their biggest areas of need coming out of spring, they did it just incredibly. I mean, they did it with a flash. And so you get Philip Bleedy, the transfer from Indiana, who also played at Texas Tech. You get Isaiah Rakes, who played at Texas A&M but was committed to USC. I had mistakenly thought he had played a couple snaps. He had never played for USC. Mm-hmm. And then you get Keyron Crawford, the edge. So what Auburn was able to do is they were able to address three significant areas along the defensive line. So not only were they able to address the needs they had on the defensive front, they got an edge guy, which was much needed. They got a three technique guy in Bleedy, and then they got a backup nose / three technique guy in Rakes, he's a hybrid. He could play both depending on what front. You know, Texas A&M under Durkin, when Rakes played there, played some three-man front and some four-man front. So that's why he literally split his snaps between both positions. You love that versatility. So now Auburn addresses the defensive line incredibly. They got what they needed. I think they're still needing a big play wide receiver. And now it looks like they made it a corner or two in the portal as well.
What I love about the defensive guys they've brought in, the three that you just talked about, Daryl, is they're all monsters. I mean, these are SEC boys, like guys that are going to look the part and also you hope are going to perform to the level that you want them to. And that's not something we've been able to say for the last couple of years in this team.
Well, when Zach and I recorded an episode for Locked On Auburn this week that's airing tomorrow, we talked about, in my opinion, it went from an area of concern to an area of strength, a room, a position group that now I consider to be a strength. And I know that the jury's to be out on that, but when you look at Trill Carter and Gage Keys and Jason Jones and Keldrick Falk and Jalen McLeod and then the freshmen that are brought in, and then you bring in these three guys, I think now you go seriously too deep and enough to play significant snaps along the SEC. So, yes, I think it went from an area of a big-time question mark to really now a solid potential position of strength for Auburn.
Auburn continuing to be active in the portal, bringing in those three defensive guys. And you mentioned the offensive side of things, Daryl. You still think this team needs another receiver, maybe a veteran guy, somebody that's proven to make those big plays?
I do. You know, they looked at the Lambert Smith kid from Penn State. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking it's going to be a bidding war. But there's a couple kids, the kid from Brown from Houston, Justice Ross Simmons from Colorado State. There's a kid from Nevada that I think they're looking at, a kid from Arizona State. I mean, there's options, and they're all guys that have big playmaking abilities. I love Lewis in the slot. I love Cam Coleman on the outside. I think Cam Brown's going to emerge. You still got Perry Thompson to come on campus. But Fair left. And there's rumors that a couple more may be jumping in the portal from the wide receiver position very soon. So if that happens, you better go get at least one, perhaps two more, to complement what you already have left on campus.
I love it because, I mean, how many years have we just looked for and begged for more receivers, more options at the receiver spot rather than, all right, well, this guy's our go-to, and if it's not him, then I don't know who's going to catch the football. Like, Auburn at least seems to be going after as many guys as they can fill in that room, and that's something I mentioned the other day and maybe late last week was, man, you now are going to have options if you continue bringing in guys through the portal at the wide receiver spot, and you don't have to put all your eggs in one or two baskets. You can just see who wins out.
That's what you want, ideally. I mean, that's the big boy programs, the programs that have won national championships and competed, the Ohio States, the Georgias, the Alabama, the Clemsons. That's what they do. So, again, when you see people leave for the portal because of playing time and not because they hate the coach, or they hate the position coach, or the NIL package isn't enough, or they're disgruntled. When you see people leaving because of playing time, you're starting to shape and construct your roster the way you want it to. That's an indication that you're close to arriving, because that's what all the schools that compete for championships do. Guys, look at Antonio Kite, okay, at Alabama. He comes to Auburn. Why? He has a chance to start at Auburn. He didn't at Alabama. Nothing wrong with that. In my mind, that's what the portal should really be intended for, is guys that either want to go up a classification, you know, your guys from a group of five that say, okay, like McLeod and Crawford, I've balled out at the group of five. Now I want to go up and see if I can handle the SEC. That's a perfect functionality of the portal. And guys that say, why should I sit for 3 years? I'm talented enough to go play somewhere else and still play for a power five, well, now a power four school, but I just can't do it here because Auburn's roster is loaded. That's where you want to be. That's when it becomes a win-win. You still got to go out and get bodies and recruit over the top of them, though, because you need, you know, you want to fulfill every roster, every scholarship spot. But, you know, I don't look at it as a bad thing. I look at it as a, in a way, your roster is getting to where it needs to be when that starts happening.
That's just where it is. I mean, that's just a fact, Daryl. I mean, that's how the portal works, and that's what every single coach and every single staff and every single program is dealing with right now. Is, look, just because you recruit this five-star recruit or this four-star guy out of high school and he comes in and spends a year does not mean that you are just guaranteed for him to hang around for another year. And it's something you and I have talked about, and something a lot of folks have talked about, is, man, it's harder than ever to be a head coach in college football, because now you bring in that five-star recruit, and let's say that he's not exactly what you want right now, but he has the potential to be good later on. You've got to show him enough respect and enough playing time for him to hang around, or guess what, Daryl? He's gone.
Well, it used to be that Nick Saban got a ton of credit for being able to keep five stars on the back burner until they were ready to play. Let's be honest. That was before the age of the transfer portal. Even Nick Saban saw the writing on the wall and how difficult it was going to be to keep players that were five-star players that did not want to sit as freshmen and sophomores behind incumbent starters, and so they would jump ship and go into – I mean, he was able to do that when there was no transfer portal.
Yeah, that was the Saban way.
Yeah, it's a different time now and a different era, and even him, even the greatest of all time, would have not been able to keep kids from jumping ship with the promise of, hey, I'll get you in the league. You'll start for me next year, whatever. That's not going to work. And then you throw in the NIL factor of that as well, with, oh, not only can I leave, I can go get paid more to leave because I'll be a starter and that's my value and my worth. You don't have a shot. You don't have a shot. It's very, very difficult to try to retain kids on your roster under that scenario.
We're talking with Daryl Dappert here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. He joins me every single Tuesday. You can catch him a couple of times a week on Locked On Auburn. He's around different radio stations, including one of our sister stations, WANI, in the mornings with Ben Taylor on Mondays. A little bit of baseball before we get to our bottom of the hour break, and then we're going to get to that inevitable conversation. I can promise you that, Double D. Baseball for Auburn, I mean, I don't know if there's anything else to say that hasn't been said already. I mean, they're playing Florida A&M right now. They've got to go back on the road to LSU this weekend after getting swept on the road this past weekend at Mississippi State. I mean, I think we may just be counting down the days for the season to be done.
Unfortunately, that's where I think we are right now. It's just from a pitching standpoint and a bullpen standpoint and blowing leads, and I never thought we'd get to this point. You're just ready for the season to be over and hit reset. And look, the bottom line is, it happens to every program. It's not, you have these years where it's just not your year. It's the one-off. You struggle and you just, no matter what happens, you just can't put things together. It's happened with Ole Miss. It's happened with Mississippi State, who was the defending national champion and couldn't even get into the SEC tournament. Other schools, you're going to have that. It's very rare that you don't have that, you know, that year where it just doesn't come together for you and you struggle. And Auburn is in the midst of this right now. And it's not that their lineup is lacking. I love their lineup. I love the portal additions they made. They just didn't get enough pitching, and they did not get what they thought they were going to get from Gonzalez. And so Auburn doesn't have a true ace, a true stopper. And that kills them. And it's difficult. It's why you see them getting swept. and not salvaging Sunday games when they're up three or four runs because their bullpen is not holding leads, because they're overworked, because the starters aren't going deep enough. So it's a really a catch-22. And you cannot, no matter how potent your offense is, you're not going to outslug people 14-13 in this league. You're going to have to pitch at some point, and Auburn is just struggling. I would say that this will be addressed significantly in the transfer portal in the offseason, and Auburn will go get some arms, kids that are on, you know, smaller schools right now, kids that maybe you got to throw some NIL money at to keep them from going to the draft. There's a lot of different things from a recruiting class that, you're basically rolling the dice. But I think the transfer portal gives you a little bit of a landing spot, and Auburn's going to have to go out and get pitching. There's no doubt in the transfer portal.
We're talking with Daryl Dappert here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We'll take our bottom of the hour break, come back, and I think we have some basketball things that we need to talk about, Daryl. Are you good to talk about some of that when we come back?
Sure, man. Anything you want. I'm down.
We'll talk about that when we come back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. I'm your man, Jacob Goertz, with you on ESPN 106.7. And joining us on the phone lines, as he does every week, it is Daryl Dappert with us, talking all things Auburn athletics. And Daryl, we've gotten football and baseball knocked out of the way, and what seems to be the biggest topic of the week so far coming out of the weekend, it was late last week, through the weekend, and now, of course, the first couple of days of this week, was the Aiden Holloway news. And look, before we get to his actual commitment, I've been saying this, man, Auburn fans were fired up even when he was just taking a visit to Tuscaloosa. No, you know, now he's committed and he's going there and he's going to be the next Alabama Crimson Tide player.
Yeah, I think from a big picture thing, first of all, nobody that follows Auburn basketball or has a, you know, a clue about Auburn basketball, unlike some of the national guys that we'll get into in a second, is surprised by this. Okay, let's just go ahead and be very honest and transparent that Aiden Holloway struggled at the NCAA tournament. His body language on the bench was less than stellar. It showed some potential problems with that. And you know, I think that the coaching staff was really wanting him to come back, but they were not bringing him back as point guard one. It was evident that they were going to get Pegues or Rice and recruit over the top of him, but give him the opportunity to stay and fight for that position. He chose not to. Great. I do not have a problem with that at all for the kid. And then even the fact that he was looked at Alabama. Okay, so I know a lot of people got up in arms about that, but you can't get angry about that and then welcome Antonio Kite with open arms. It goes both ways. Now, is Nate Oates doing this to give a little jab at Auburn? Absolutely. Does Nate Oates think that he can turn anybody into a super shooter and the talent is there and work? Sure. I'm sure he does. But at the end of the day, where's he slot in at Alabama? If Sears comes back, he's leaving Auburn, where he was likely to be a backup point guard, to go to Alabama to be a backup point guard. So it's really, you really haven't gained anything. That's the problem. So I don't have a problem with him going to Alabama. If he feels like that's his best fit, if he feels like he's going to get a ton of shots, you know, defensively, not be, you know, is counted on or responsible defensively, whatever. The problem I have is out the door, he took a shot at Bruce Pearl.
Yes, he did.
The coach that stood at a podium at a press conference and said, lay off this kid. Quit tweeting at him. Quit saying things about him. Stood there like a father figure and said, stop it, Auburn family. You're better than this. Leave the kid alone. Defended the kid. Then, despite his many struggles, shooting-wise, Pearl kept running him back out there, hoping he would shoot himself out of it. Showed faith in him. How does he get rewarded by that? Him making a smart-aleck comment about he was sold a bill of goods on his way out the door. That's the problem I have. He has amnesia. Secondly, look, if you're a national writer, whether it's that clown Goodman or, you know, the guy that came to I'm trying to remember that podcast where there's like three of them.
Yeah.
And then you've got Yeah, now you've got Seth Davis with CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Who takes an opportunity to shoot, to take shots at Auburn. He's not even involved in the situation, and he puts out a tweet saying, you know.
He admitted it, too. He admitted he didn't know.
He said, I don't know the details. Okay, that's where your tweet should have stopped, idiot, right there. I don't need the details, so I don't know what this looks like on the surface, but it should be interesting, whatever. But he says it looks bad, it's detrimental, because not only did he leave, but he left to go to Alabama, and he's potential to have be a rising sophomore. And then he throws this little ditty out there where he says, I don't know the details, but it must mean that Alabama has more NIL money than Auburn. Okay, that's just a stupid clown take. You don't know the details. You don't know what you're talking about, so shut up. You know, all you have to do is get off your couch and call somebody, an Auburn beat writer, or call an Auburn coaching staff member and say, hey, you know, what's the deal? And they'll make it very obvious to you that Auburn had plenty of NIL money for people that they valued, like Jani Broome, Dylan Cardwell, and J.P. McGee's. So are you trying to tell me that Broome, who is going to be probably the odds-on favorite preseason SEC player of the year, came back to Auburn without a rich, lucrative NIL package? Please. Of course he did. Well, they had money for him. They had money to keep Cardwell from leaving. They had money to go get Pegues from Furman. They still got money to go get another backup point guard and probably another backup four. So it's not about having the money. It's about the allocation thereof and where you're going to spend the money. It's obvious. All you had to do was see that Broome came back to realize that. But, no, it's lazy, entitled, I don't like Bruce Pearl for some reason, so I'm going to take a shot at Auburn journalism. And it happens way too often, and it happens more from a national narrative, and I don't know why. I don't know why. I don't know if it's because of tweets, because Bruce Pearl's not bashful about certain political stances. I don't know if it's because of his brashness or what he happened before. I just know that, you know, there's too much. Look, we're talking about a coach last year in Nate Oates that had a big-time scandal happen. Huge. And I hadn't heard nothing this year from a national perspective.
Hey-o.
There's no one taking shots at him. And it's just a head scratcher to me. And I know that sometimes Barkley is on set with Seth Davis, and I hope he absolutely destroys him face to face and calls him out for a lazy, stupid, ill-informed take. And that's all that was.
Well, there's a lot to cover on this, and I had a feeling, I told our listeners here, I had a feeling that Daryl had a few things to say, and rightfully so, and I think you are a voice that represents of how a lot of Auburn fans feel about this entire situation, and so I want to walk back and kind of cover all of our bases here on this. Talking about Aiden Holloway, and from the just from the basketball perspective first, about him leaving Auburn and going to play for Alabama, for that system, that coach. You know, you said if that's what he believes is best for him, if that's what his family wants to do, fine. Do you think that, again, just looking at this basketball perspective, the Alabama system, Nate Oates, how they run their offense and their defense, is Alabama a good spot for a player like Aiden Holloway and his skill set?
If he finds his shot and he has the freedom to freelance and not worry about defensive responsibilities and just says, hey, you're going to play 20 minutes a game, shoot as much as you want in this fast pace, maybe. But he's not a kind of guard that plays up-tempo. He doesn't slash well. He doesn't go to the basket quick with quickness. So pace is not his friend. Can he shoot it? Yeah. I mean, if he gets hot, he can hit six or seven like Nate Oates' system affords. But again, why is it a good system if Reitzel, who just announced he's coming back, Latrell Reitzel, the two guard, yeah, you lost Griffin, you lost Walters, Estrada, but if Sears comes back, where are you going to play?
Which I think he does, Daryl. I think Mark Sears comes back.
And if he comes back with Reitzel and Grant Nelson, and then they got the kid from South Florida, this the transfer portal, yeah, I mean, you know, the roster's still filling out again. But that's why it's head-scratching to me is if – and I agree with you. I think Sears is probably leaning on coming back because he's not going to get a high draft grade yet. I don't think he goes in the first round. So if he comes back, where is he slotted in? He's leaving one program where he was the backup point guard, potentially. Well, yeah, because once they signed Pegues, he was not going to start over him, to go to another.
And that's where it just makes absolutely no sense, unless they figure, okay, we're going to play you 15 minutes a game, go nuts. I don't know. It makes no sense if Sears comes back. That's why that system is not a good fit for him. Somewhere, I know that Hurley, Bobby Hurley at Arizona State was looking at him, Michigan was looking at him, Arizona was looking, and they all backed off.
Yep,
they
did. You
have to ask yourself why.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And look, that's a Michigan program that was looking at multiple Auburn guards and went with the one they thought was better in Trey Donaldson. And
got Walters from Alabama.
Yep.
And got Danny Wolf from Yale, the kid that, you know, that Auburn played against the NCAA tournament. They signed Donaldson, Walters, and Wolf. And so, again, you know, Arizona State desperate for guards, not a take. Arizona, Caleb Love put his name in the draft. Some other guards, not a take. I don't know. I mean, there's something there. There's something there.
Yeah, and you said something earlier. Was this Nate Oates just doing it because he could, right? Was he getting in there and saying, oh, I'm so sorry Auburn mistreated you. Come play here where we'll take care of you here in Tuscaloosa. I think there was definitely some of that. And,
oh, yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a jab there. Somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And that's fine. There's a little hidden message there, and that's okay. Look, I don't begrudge the kid at all, except that, again, to me, it changed the narrative, and a little bit of hands-off changed when he ripped Pearl out the door.
Which is where I want to go next. There's no advantage to doing that. I mean, we talked yesterday on the show. I mean, you not only built that bridge and burned it down, you tore it down to where it can never, ever, ever be built or crossed again. I mean, you made a lot of people upset, did Aiden Holloway and his family, for doing the things that they did and then saying the things he did on the way out the door.
Well, you look at the way even Alan Flanagan, who was much maligned here and was a very polarizing figure, he went out the door, didn't say a word. Kept his mouth shut, kept his head down. Although he's got some issues, he went out the door and did not say anything about Bruce Pearl. Trey Donaldson did not say anything about Bruce Pearl. Anytime a kid leaves and goes in the portal, and yet Holloway decided to take a shot. And I don't think that's going to bode well for him when he comes to Neville Arena to play. It's going to be brutal.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of Alabama fans got on my timeline and said, oh, the kid won't have a problem with it. He's only got to play there once. And blah, blah. We'll see. Keep telling yourself that. Keep putting your head in the sand and whistling by the graveyard, because Alan Flanagan found out when Lior Berman, of all people, locked him down in the game. Locked him down because Bruce Pearl saw something when they practiced against each other last year. So, you know, we'll see. I think it's going to be a problem. I think mentally the kid already showed that he had some, you know, he got upset, some emotional issues, that immaturity issues. What's going to happen when you miss your first couple shots in Neville Arena and the jungle is on you like crazy? And don't think that Broom and Chad Baker Mazzara and Dylan Cardwell and some of the other guys don't think that they don't have some little something for him for what he said about their coach on the way out the door.
Yeah,
it
as they should.
It doesn't work that way. Yeah, it doesn't work that way. There's going to be a message sent, and so he just needs to buckle up is all I can say. But he did it to himself.
Well, we'll see how it goes with him at Alabama. And then the final point that you brought up was the national media perspective.
Yeah.
The national media perspective on a lot of people that, look, this has become a growing trend in college sports of athletes playing at one school and then transferring to their rival. I mean, you had an Ohio State player do it to Michigan like the next day. And then you've got ETN who went from Florida to Georgia. Like, it's becoming a more common thing, and it's hard for folks that have covered sports for so long and watched sports for so long, especially passionate fans in the state of Alabama who are either Auburn or Alabama fans. Like, it's hard to accept the fact that it can happen and that players are doing it. But for national media, I just don't think they truly understand how much this has really upset some folks down here.
Yeah, it started with Corey Grant when he left Alabama in football, but back before the transfer portal and came to Auburn. And then, like I mentioned, Antonio Kite. Again, I don't have a problem with it if it's a good fit for you. It shouldn't matter that it's your rival. I would say this. One of the biggest overhauls that I would love to see with this transfer portal thing is obviously holding to the fact that you can't transfer out multiple times. You get one free one if you're going Power 5 to Power 5, Power 4 to Power. And I also don't like the interconference. I would like to see them say, okay, if you transfer within the conference, then you got to sit out of here.
Yeah.
You can go to any other school in any other conference, but within your conference, if you do that, you got to sit out a year. I would like to see them implement that, and then also implement the fact that, you know, no multiple transfers. Don't be soft and give in. Stick to the rule. You get one. It's carte blanche, but you get one, and then that's it.
Well, the problem is when the portal started, when this whole thing was there, I mean, there were so many restrictions and rules, and instead of adding more, the NCAA has just continued to peel them back and take them off and take them away. And so it started extremely strict, and then over the last few years, they just continued to take some of those away. And we're well on our way, Daryl, to you want to transfer 10 times in 10 years? Go for it. It doesn't matter. We don't care.
And that's a joke. That's where it's a huge problem to allow that to happen. And, you know, I think that they didn't handle it to begin with the right way. They did not stick to their guns on certain things. They caved.
Shocker.
And that's where we are right now. We're going to see kids like, you know, the kid from Proctor, Alabama to Iowa, back to Alabama. I mean, and listen, Auburn's benefited. Isaiah Rakes is on his third school. Bleedy, on his third school. So we can't be hypocrites.
That's right.
You know, it giveth and it taketh. I mean, you know, Auburn's benefited just yesterday with two of the three defensive tackles they got being on the third school. So
that's how it goes. Here's the good news, though, Daryl, before we let you go. This Auburn basketball roster stacked, man. And I know we had a little bit of conversation about this last week, and we will continue to do that as the basketball season approaches in November. But man, this team's got some serious talent, and there's no doubt in my mind that they should be a top 10 team consensus going into the preseason next year.
And it's only going to get better. Keep an eye on names like Mark Freeman, a point guard from Morehead State who sat out last year with a wrist injury, but in 2023 was the Ohio Valley Conference Player of the Year, point guard, averaged 15 points a game. Duke Miles, a kid at High Point who played at Troy from Montgomery, wants to play back at Alabama. He averaged 18. And then for the four position, R.J. Godfrey from Clemson, 6'8 forward, who a bench player, came off the bench for 7 points a game, but could compete with Chaney Johnson in that four role. So they're not done. I think they add two more bodies, a backup point guard and a backup 4-5 hybrid. Then that roster will be complete, and that roster will be as good as I've seen Bruce Pearl have at Auburn.
His name is Daryl Dappertz, and he's with us every single Tuesday, and he's been doing it for a long, long time, man. We appreciate you as always. When I say that I look forward to this each and every week, I truly do mean that, man, and our listeners love it. You love it, I hope so, and I do as well, and man, we just really appreciate your time. It's always a blast talking sports with you, my man.
All right, man. You too. I love being on. Thank you for having me. Have a great week, brother.
You too, man. We'll talk to you next week. That is Daryl Dappert's Double D with us here on the Tuesday edition of the show. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it up. I know we haven't had a lot of phone calls today. We've been busy, but hey, I got time right now. If you want to call in, be a part of it, you can be our final caller of the show. Give us a call, 334-321-1390.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Appreciate you being with us all show long, whether it has been all show, whether it's been 1 hour, one segment, whatever the case may be. Appreciate you being with us here on ESPN 106.7. Just got off the phone with Daryl Dappertz, Double D, who is with us every single Tuesday. And look, had lots of things to say when it comes to Auburn football, Auburn baseball a little bit, maybe not as much, but then lots of things on Auburn basketball with all of the changes and the big news, of course, right now with Aiden Holloway, who is going to Alabama, Tuscaloosa. You know, it's just, there's so much to say on that, and eventually we are going to get to a point where we just have to move on and accept the fact of what it is, but Daryl, I knew he had some things to say, and we appreciate him being with us, so that was a lot of fun. Also, back in hour number one, we had Lindsey Crosby with us, our baseball guru for our baseball power hour. He joined us talking Braves, Major League Baseball, and some crazy storylines with that, with the Yankees manager being tossed for not saying anything, which is pretty wild. And then we talked a little bit of Auburn baseball, SEC standings, things like that. So that was back in the first hour as well. So if you've been here, we appreciate you doing that. And if you missed any of the show today, you can go and catch up with the podcast. You can find it one of two ways, ESPNAU.com, or just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. Update on Auburn baseball. Remember, they are underway over at Plainsman Park. You can tune into that broadcast if you'd like to. Now that our show's over, you can go over to, or flip back and forth anyway. You can tune in on Wings 94.3. That's our sister station next door. That's wingsfm.com. You can find Andy Burch and Brad Law on the Auburn Sports Network on live right now on Wings 94.3. Auburn has just taken a 1-0 lead over Florida A&M. They had bases loaded in the bottom of the third. They bring one around, just one away. Oh, how about that? There you go. There's a double down the side, and it is now 3-0 Auburn as we speak. So there's a nice little update for you as well. Auburn is up 3-0 in the bottom of the third. They've got one away and a runner on second thanks to a Freeman double down the left field line. So brings around a couple of guys, and Auburn is on top of Florida A&M 3-0. And look, not that Auburn was in a real threat to lose this game, I guess. I know we talked with Lindsay earlier about fans possibly being a little bit nervous and truly questioning this game. It should never be that. And it's just to the point this season where you're just looking for some wins, man. You're looking for some positivity, anything that you can build on if you're Auburn to go into the rest of the SEC schedule and, of course, get into the offseason and try to figure out what in the world that you're going to do. And so, again, you can tune into that over on Wings 94.3, Auburn on top 3-0 in the bottom of the third. Coming up tomorrow on the show, Uncle T-Bone will be back in the studio. We will possibly talk a little NFL draft tomorrow. Uncle T-Bone is a big NFL draft guy. I am too, but I didn't know he was. And so we may have a little fun with that tomorrow, depending on what we could see from a couple of Auburn guys, some Georgia guys, Alabama. Talk about some NFL teams as well. See what my Packers are going to do. We need some help, please. or maybe have some fun with that tomorrow, and you just never know. Thursday, we will have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, Chris Gordy from Locked On SEC. So all sorts of things coming up this week. And again, also want to say this. Stay tuned as we get through the rest of April, as we get into May. We are going to have some more remotes coming up, more live on location, so just keep that in mind. And as I say all the time, man, when ESPN 106.7 shows up, we bring the party. We have a lot of fun on our live location remotes, so be sure that you are staying tuned with that. We will update you always and keep you up to date on those so you can come out and join us. We've been so many places so far, and we plan on doing a whole lot more of those. So, again, appreciate you being with us here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Uncle T-Bone back tomorrow. The Drive with Bill Cameron, Dan Peck coming up. And, of course, Auburn baseball right now over on Wings 94.3. They've got a 3-0 lead over Florida A&M in the bottom of the third. And a weirdly timed game, but Lindsey Crosby brought up a good point. Florida A&M got a drive back tonight to Tallahassee. So they had a 3 o'clock start. They'll be heading back tonight. Auburn on top 3-0. We'll recap it a little bit tomorrow and have Uncle T-Bone back with us as well. Appreciate you being with us. Until tomorrow, 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.